Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have her back, and certainly great to have you listening in today as we go through the flower garden and the vegetable garden. Maybe we touch on some shrubs and trees. We might look at the lawns, all kinds of things. You can join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lisa, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
We have, on a lower note or a downer note in a way, we had a lot of flooding in parts of Wisconsin now. And
May get some more.
And that obviously could have a food safety issue when it comes to our gardens. And I know there's even a fact sheet on this.
Yeah, there is. Food safety persons, Barb Ingham and Steve Ingham from UW Food Science, have put out a fact sheet called Safely Using Produce from Flooded Gardens. And it is very thorough, goes over what is safe to use, what isn't safe to use. Mostly everything isn't safe to use unless it develops after the flooding. And that you can cook some things. Other things, cook and peel, or peel and cook, and pretty much all of the soft things like raspberries. There might still be some fall raspberries and even some fall strawberries out there that would have to be discarded if they'd been touched by the floodwaters. That's on our WIHORT website. If you just Google WI for Wisconsin, HORT, H-O-R-T, you'll come up with that website, and that's one of the garden facts.
All right. Safely using produce from flooded gardens. That's the title. Well, already many people with us today. Bernadette in Shell Lake up first. Hi, Bernadette.
Hello. I want to ask you about my hydrangeas. I have an endless summer, which I've had many years, and it's a very healthy, vigorous plant. It's about 3 feet across, and it seems like each year it has fewer blooms, and this year it had none. Then I have a Penny Mac hydrangea, which I've only had, this is the second year. Last year it was a small plant, but it had several clusters of beautiful flowers. This year it has grown much larger, but it has had no flowers. So I'm wondering what I should do.
Okay. First of all, remind me where Shell Lake is.
Northern Wisconsin.
Okay.
Northwestern Wisconsin.
Yeah, northwest.
Okay. Do you happen to know what cold hardiness zone you're in?
Pardon me?
Do you know what cold hardiness zone you're in?
No, I don't, but I bought, they were both purchased in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah. That could be the problem.
Both of those plants should be hardy to zone 5, which we have here in Madison. However, I believe you're probably, if you're in Shell Lake, you're probably zone 4 or zone 3.
See, which county is Shell Lake again? I'm forgetting.
Pruin them.
Which county is in Shell Lake? Is Shell Lake in? I'm sorry, I've just forgotten.
One is an endless summer and one is a Penny Mac.
Okay. Both of those are just marginally hardy where you live. Now, the endless summer blooms on old wood. So if the winter is very cold, you may lose a number of those blossoms. It also blooms on new wood, but we're finding that it doesn't bloom as much on new wood. So I would cover it in the winter and make sure that you mulch it, maybe put a bushel basket over it or something so that you can try and keep it warm. The Penny Mac is not, the flower buds are not hardy in your area either. And so I would try and cover that one as well.
All right.
So vigorous plants.
Yeah, the leaf and branch material is hardy in your area, but the flower buds are not always hardy.
Okay. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Bernadette. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Joya in Fitchburg next. Hi, Joya. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Sorry. I have two questions for Lisa. One is, somebody gave me poinsettia last year.
Mm-hmm.
It survived through the summer. I had it outside. Now
uh-huh.
I brought it inside. Now, how do I get the leaves red, get to red? And somebody told me to cover it 12 hours dark and 12 hours open.
Yeah, what you do is you put it in a closet or a box where no light can get in, starting at about 5 o'clock every night without fail, and then bring it back out in the morning at about 8 o'clock or so. And it's kind of
it's a
onerous
hard, yeah.
procedure.
So when do I water it, at night or during the daytime?
During the day, if possible.
And do I fertilize it too?
You can, but I guess I would hold off until you see some flower buds starting to bloom. Now, you may start to lose some leaves because it's been out in more light and, better conditions outside for growing. And once you bring it back inside, there's less light available for the plant. So it may lose a few leaves, but don't panic. It should mm-hmm. Adapt to that.
You
okay.
do have to be pretty scrupulous, though,
yeah.
about every single night. And it's got to get at least 12 hours.
Right.
If any light gets in, you have to start over.
Mm-hmm. No, I have a big drum I cover with.
Oh, that's a great
Perfect.
Idea.
Perfect.
So the night light doesn't go through it.
No.
The only thing is sometimes I don't do it at 5 o'clock. I do it maybe 10 o'clock before I go to bed.
Oh, yeah. It needs to have
12
hours of dark.
Okay. And another question is, when do you chop, trim or divide the peonies?
That should be this time of year, around the end of September, beginning of October. And peonies they can be a little tough. They've got a very big and somewhat brittle root, but this is the time of year if you want to transplant them or if you want to divide them, to dig them up. And you want to make sure that each piece of root has a pink bud on it for next year. That's called an eye. And you want to make sure that you have at least a couple of eyes because those will make the shoots for next year.
Mm-hmm. There
okay.
you go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, with your gardening question at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Steve in Menominee next. Steve, hello.
Yes, hello. My question today was on mushrooms. Of course, with all the rain we've had this year, we've got a number of mushrooms up here in our area. And I just wanted to know, where's a good place to turn to find out what mushrooms are edible and what mushrooms are not?
Okay, if you Google Tom Volk, V-O-L-K, he has a great website. He's a professor, great website on fungi. And that's where I generally send people when they have mushroom questions.
Oh, okay. All right. I just wasn't sure. I'd been told once that if you see animals or bugs invading mushrooms, usually it's an edible type. But
not always.
not always.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's why I always send people to the expert, because I want to be very sure for safety issues that we get the right information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Tom Volk.
Mm-hmm. V-O-L-K. Really cool website.
Brenda in Pine River, on to you. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I cannot grow anything to save my life, but my mother-in-law has given me a Japanese wisteria, and it's just growing like mad in my yard, and I want to know how I can care for it over the winter.
Okay. Those plants tend to be a little rambunctious. Where are you from?
Washera County, Wisconsin.
Washera. Okay. The boy. This is your first year with it, right?
Right.
Okay, and it bloomed for you this year?
No, it did not bloom for me yet.
Okay.
But it's growing like crazy.
I'm wondering if the flower buds are going to be hardy up there. Thinking of the different species, I think it's only flower bud hardy to zone 5. I would have to look that up. It's funny, we've had two questions about this morning, but there are plants like forsythia and hydrangeas and so on where the plant may grow gangbusters. However, the flower buds have different hardiness temperatures than the vegetative portions. And so you may have some difficulty if that blooms on old wood, getting it to flower. There's nothing really that you need to do with it over the winter. I should have brought my cheat book. I cannot remember whether those bloom on. I think they bloom on new wood. So if they bloom on new wood, you're fine. Because the new wood will produce the buds next year. But if they bloom on buds that have to overwinter, it's kind of iffy.
All right. There you go.
Best I can do for you at the moment.
All right, Brenda. Thanks for calling.
For your help. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye. And let's turn to Dennis in Madison next. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, good morning. Say, I've got just about an access to an unlimited supply of oak and birch sawdust. Is there anything you can do with them with regard to either flower or vegetable gardening or raspberries or anything?
Is this composted or not composted?
It's not composted. It's
okay.
Just,
And is it from treated wood or is it from
trees that are
trees that are being ground up?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Is the sawdust from, like, wood planks that might have been treated with something, or is it from trees that have been ground up?
It's from trees that have been cut up for firewood.
Okay.
Okay. And are any of those oaks, were they infected with oak wilt? Or were they just cut down?
I think we lost him.
We lost him. Okay, well, the answer is, generally with sawdust, it's very high in carbon, and materials that are organic and very high in carbon sometimes can tie up the nitrogen in the soil. So you want to compost them outside for probably a season or so before using them. You also want to make sure that the source is clean. Now, usually oak wilt we shouldn't have a problem with because it's been ground up, it's not going to be able to survive. But if you were using those sawdust, if you were using it right away, I suppose there's a remote possibility that there could be a problem. But in general, with sawdust type products, you first want to compost them, and then when you use them, mix them in thoroughly.
There you go. Thank you again for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson on Garden Talk. We're going to turn to Chester in Athens next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you. I have three quick questions. Maybe this is too many questions, but one, could I possibly leave my potatoes in the ground if I mulch them with a bunch of straw or marsh hay over the winter? The next question is, how could I propagate mountain ash? My mother has a bunch of mountain ash berries on her tree. I'd like to plant those berries to get a bunch of mountain ash tree seedlings going. And finally, I planted some wild grapes about 3 years ago. They're about 4 to 5 foot on vining. Do I cut them back or just leave them go? I just want to create a bird habitat.
Okay, let's start with the potatoes.
Okay.
Potatoes you could leave in the ground for a little while, but not all winter. They're probably going to freeze or rot either either way. And potatoes need to be cured after they've been harvested in order to have them last. I remember seeing Roger Swain on Victory Garden, you know, pulling up his potatoes in February and so on. And I thought, yeah, well, nice if you live in an area where you can do that. And we can to some degree. You probably could in December or maybe even January, depending on how far down the frost goes, but not until spring.
All right.
Okay, so we got that one. What was the second?
The mountain ash.
Mountain ash. Okay. There is a wonderful book by Michael Durr, that D-I-R-R, that tells, it's all about propagating woody species. He tells you if you want to take cuttings, when to take those cuttings, whether they need to be treated with a rooting hormone, if you're going to be using berries, what time of year those should be harvested, whether they need to undergo a cold period before they'll germinate. And I think on that one, I am going to refer you to my colleague Ann Munson at the Extension office, because she has access to that book. And her number is 608-224-3721.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, and tell her that you're trying to propagate mountain ash. That's one that I haven't tried from seed before, but I suspect it probably needs a cold period in order to germinate.
Okay, and then my third thing is the wild grape. I have them 3-year seedlings. I bought them from the state nursery, and I'm trying to create a turkey habitat or whatever. I don't know
where
to eat these, but do I cut? They're growing nicely, but do I cut them back or leave them alone?
You said you've had them 3 years now.
3 years, they're about, yeah.
And it's just wild grape. It's not one of the cultivars.
No, it's just a wild grape for food, for wild, you know.
For wild birds.
I don't think you need to worry about pruning it then.
Don't prune?
No. Unless it starts attacking your other plants.
They do tend
to get around those vines.
I have a fence row, and I just want them, if I could get them stronger, if I prune them back, I just don't know if they would grow more strongly, because now they're just vining out, but you don't want to cut them back, you would say, huh?
No, I don't think you need to, not this year anyway.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling, Chess. Kay in Mountain Iron, Minnesota. On to you. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm going to have some raspberry bushes transplanted, and I was wondering what the best time is right now and what you need to do.
Okay. Usually we transplant raspberries in spring. Are these fall or ever-bearing raspberries or June or July bearing?
They're my mom's, so I really don't know often.
Yeah.
I don't think they're the ever bloom. I just think they're in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. I would, let's see, you're in Minnesota too, and
yes.
Mountain Iron's up there a ways, I expect. I would wait until spring to do that, maybe April or May, when you see that the canes are putting out some leaves. They have an underground rhizome that goes horizontally through the soil, and every so often it'll put up a new cane.
Right.
So you just dig those out, and you have to make a cut at some point along the line. But you want to make sure that you have a 6 or 8 inch root.
Root, yeah.
And, with a cane that is got leaves on it. But I would do it at that time of year.
Okay. Now, my cousin she suggested that we do it in the fall, and she's done it in the fall before, so...
This late in the fall?
Yes. She said even into October.
Okay. Depending on where you live, it might or might not be successful. Are you north of her or?
Well, I am 60 miles north of Duluth, if that helps you.
Yeah, a long way up there.
You know what you could do? You could try a couple plants and see if it works. And if it doesn't, go for the springtime.
Yeah. And I actually have raised beds that I'm going to put them into. Would that help any?
Well, it helps the soil to warm up quicker in the spring, but unfortunately, it also will freeze faster
in the winter.
Okay.
So, if it was me, I'd wait till spring.
Okay.
Just depends on how much work you want to do this fall and whether you might want to maybe repeat it in spring.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gabe. Daryl in Cumberland. On to you now. Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I need to know if I can pick your brain.
Okay.
We have it's a tree or a shrub. But if it's a tree, it grows like a shrub. It's about the size of a medium to good-sized lilac bush.
Okay.
Now, it's got ridges along the bark has ridges along the limbs that make it look square instead of round.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the
leaves are red color?
Like a hot pink.
Okay. That is a burning bush some type. The genus name is Euonymus. Euonymus, and it usually. Sorry.
You what?
Euonymus. It's Euonymus, and usually they call them winged euonymus or winged burning bush, and. Depending on the species, they have now in some areas become invasive because of the seeds that they produce. It's been for a long time a very popular foundation shrub, and they do have gorgeous, gorgeous fall color. But I would be careful if I was next to a wilderness area or a park or something like that in growing it.
Mm-hmm. This one is just growing by itself. It hasn't spread at all in all the years that it's been there.
Mm-hmm. But it probably grew from a seed then. And that's the problem, is that the birds are eating the seeds and taking them into forested areas and then...
pooping them out.
Yeah, exactly. But if you aren't real near to a park or other wilderness area, you're probably okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Somebody
else wondered, Amy's in Madison, wondered about speaking of burning bushes, she wants to transplant it from its current location to one with light and soil that better suits its needs. Should she do it now or wait till spring? Another one of those deals?
In Madison, yeah, you could do it now if you wanted to. One thing that we do occasionally have problems with burning bush over the winter is that if we have a real deep snow cover, sometimes the mice and voles and rabbits will chew on the bark right around the trunk and girdle the plant. And then, of course, can't bring up any water from the soil. And so you have a lot of death. What you might do if you're moving it into an untested area, particularly if you have rabbits and mice, is I would fence it after you transplant it. But they're pretty tough. Should be able to do that. Actually, our woody ornamental specialist that I just found out yesterday is going to be conducting some tests on different species of burning bush and different cultivars of burning bush to see exactly how invasive they are, how many of the seeds are going to germinate, and so on. So I'm really thrilled that she's doing that. That's Dr. Laura Jell.
Oh, Laura's doing that. Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. What about clematis or clematis? Could you move that now? Summer blooming?
I wouldn't move that now. Clematis can be kind of fussy.
Yeah.
And they can have overwintering problems as well.
Betty in Jefferson, let's turn to you now. Hi, Betty.
Hi there. I decided to plant two blueberry bushes because I like blueberries.
Okay.
And I put them in a little corner of my yard, and then I made an arch around them, and I planted marigolds maybe about a foot and a half away from the blueberry bushes. But lo and behold, the bushes got so big and they got so dense, I couldn't even see my blueberry bushes. I did uncover them the day before yesterday, and they're pretty puny. But I'm wondering, do I need to take care of them over winter?
The blueberry bushes. Okay, mm-hmm. You're saying that the marigolds got so big that they got in the way of the blueberries, or?
Oh, the marigolds completely took over the whole area.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right, I'm on the same page now. The blueberries do need to be fenced over winter, and if it's their first year, they should be covered. We have some blueberry beds at the extension office, and the rabbits eat them every year if we don't fence those blueberries. And they do suggest that at least the first couple of years that you mulch them.
How deep of the mulch?
I would use straw and just, you know, like 3 inches, or you could even put a pot over it if you wanted to, or a rose cone or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sounds good. I also bought two mum bushes, and I've got to put them in the ground. It's not too late to do it, is it?
Well, it's not too late. I have found, and this is purely anecdotal, that the bigger the plant, the less it seems to survive over the winter. Now, the earlier that you get those in, the better, because they don't tend to establish themselves as well as we might like over the winter.
Mm.
So I would get those in the ground as soon as you can, and unless they're very tall, they don't recommend that you cut them back for the winter. Now, if they're like, you know, 3 feet tall or something, then, yeah, cut them back to about a foot. But if they're only about a foot tall or so, leave those, because that leaf material and stem material protects the new buds that are at the base that will come up for next year. So with those, you would cut them back in the spring.
Oh, they're only about 6 inches high, but they're just loaded with blossoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Go ahead and plant those. Make sure it's someplace that it drains well. That's one thing that they really like, is good drainage.
Uh-huh, I see. Oh, well, thank you very much for all your information.
Yeah,
sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Mums, you know, I buy some mums and put them out in pots, and then when fall is over, out they go.
I've found that if you get them in spring and in a small pot, they really seem to do
well.
A lot better.
Alan Superior, we're on to you. Hi, Al.
Yeah, hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I inherited a bonsai tree, and I was just wondering what the best way to take care of it is. I don't know really anything about them. Do they need a lot of sunshine, or?
Well, it depends on what kind of plant is bonsai. Is it a type of juniper or an evergreen conifer of some kind, or is it got broad leaves?
It's more, I'm not really sure. It's more kind of like evergreen, I think. It's not very big. It's only like 5 inches tall.
Really small one.
Okay, pointy leaves? Like little needles?
They're kind of pointy, yeah.
Okay, that probably then is some kind of conifer, and they do need a lot of light. A south window is good, or a west window, or if you don't have that, you should probably use a plant light.
Okay. All right. Okay.
They're really neat little plants, but they do take some maintenance because you have to keep them pruned in order to keep them small.
All right. Yeah. Well, like I said, I know nothing about it, so thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Vic in Algoma, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, my son is growing pumpkins, and he's got like a half a dozen of them that are about as big as bushel baskets, but he was wondering when do they turn orange, because they're still as green as grass.
Is that right? When did he plant? I mean, that's really odd.
They were planted early. I mean, he's got some small ones that turned orange, but these are just gigantic, and they're still green.
Wow.
Are they still growing?
They should have turned orange.
They must be still
growing
if they're green.
Yeah, that is really strange. And put them in at the regular time of year. They're not some odd variety, are they?
No, that was running through my mind.
Yeah,
too.
No, they were from from pumpkins that we had last year, and we threw them in the horse pasture.
Oh, you saved the seeds. Okay,
and they seeded. And they're growing. I mean, the vines are gigantic. So are the pumpkins, but they're still green.
The other thing is that if you use too much nitrogen fertilizer, you can end up with big pumpkins that are green. But if you save seeds, you don't usually end up with pumpkins or squash. You don't usually end up with a product that resembles the parent plant. It takes about 12 visits from a bee to thoroughly pollinate a pumpkin or a squash, and that bee may have visited who knows what other squash. So often you will get, if you have a volunteer squash or something coming up, it often is some very odd variety that is maybe not as edible as you would like, and that holds true with the pumpkins as well. So not sure which of those two scenarios, or maybe both, are going on. But the moral of the story is probably use fresh seed next year.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Scott Craven is trying to grow a champion pumpkin this year and is having very good success.
Oh, we've had lots of water.
Had plenty of water.
Is he going to compete in the pumpkin regatta?
I don't know if he is or not, but I know Jim Nienhuis has had a little trouble with some of his giant pumpkins, but Scott paid something like $15 for one seed.
Wow. That's so, one special pumpkin.
Well, it was from the Minnesota Champion or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they maybe it was two or three. He might have gotten three seeds for $15. I don't remember. But his goal was to get one of these giant pumpkins. And apparently, I haven't been over to see it yet, but he says pretty big, pretty big. Harry in Rock Falls, on to you. Hi, Harry.
I have three questions for you. One is, I have a 25-year-old mountain ash that lost all its leaves in August, and then and its berries, and it now it's come back with a lot of fresh growth and actually flowers.
Ooh.
And that's my first question. What do you think? And the second question is, I have a river birch. It's a weeping type. And it's a beautiful tree. It has this beautiful screen of branches, but they dangle down and touch the ground, and it's just horrible to mow around.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if in the summer, can I prune those branches so they're, easier to get under?
Yeah. With the birches, if you prune in spring, they tend to what we call bleed. They a lot of sap will run out.
Correct,
so I would wait until summer, early summer, after all the leaves have expanded to do your major pruning. But sure, you can do that.
Okay.
And for the mountain ash, boy, that... That doesn't sound real good. Did you have a drought in your area?
It was extremely wet, of course.
Yeah, the other way, yeah.
Everywhere else.
Was it flooded?
No, it was. It's really sandy around here, so that flooding doesn't really happen. So.
Usually, what you're describing happens as a result of a big stress event or as a result of disease. For all the leaves to be lost and then to re-leaf. You may see some dieback in the spring. Typically, when we have new growth appearing at this time of year, you end up with some frost damage and so on. You haven't had branches dying off here and there, have you?
Not really, no. I mean, let's see. It's popular with the sapsuckers, so...
You may have an insect problem in that case. Okay. Usually when a tree is heavily attacked by woodpeckers or sapsuckers, it means that there's a borer or some type of insect infestation that they're sensing and going after. Mountain ash, typically in our area anyway, is not a really long-lived tree because it's very susceptible to a bacterial disease called fire blight as well as insect problems. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it doesn't sound good just on first blush here.
I expected that.
And 15 years is really pretty good. But you may have to do some pruning in spring if it makes it through.
Well, I noticed fire blight on my pear trees this year. So.
Oh, that's awful, awful stuff. Be sure when you prune out the dead stuff that you prune in the dormant season 6 to 8 inches below where you see visible symptoms, and disinfect your tools with rubbing alcohol between every cut. If you don't do it between every cut, you're just moving
It around.
Yeah. And both mountain ash and pear are susceptible to
one last question.
Sure.
I also have a black cherry in the front yard, and I noticed today a gelatinous, real gelatinous clear emission from it. You got any idea what that is?
Do you see any sunken areas, any cankered?
No, it's coming like right out of the bark, actually, in numerous spots.
Ooh, that kind of sounds like fire blight. I mean, it has that bacterial ooze, but if you're not seeing any cracks in the bark or any sunken, cankered, discolored areas, is it coming out of areas of the bark that look fine?
Yeah, yes.
That's really weird.
Good, I stumped
you. You stumped me. I'd send a sample to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in Madison.
The UW.
Right. Yeah, the UW.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Our guest on Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can help us take days off our pledge drive. For every 800 donations we get ahead of time, we're taking off one day of the drive. And right now, we're 263 pledges away from taking the first day off. You can help us. Go to WPR.org to donate now, any amount, and take a day off. That's a good thing to do. We have an email from Ellen, who followed directions that came with her amaryllis bulb and set it out for the summer, and it put up leaves to her surprise. What do I do now, she says.
Okay. That's not all that unusual, actually. What may happen is that you may get an early bloom out of that bulb, or the leaves may start to die off. And then if they do start to die off, let them do that and kind of not stop watering it, but kind of restrict the amount of water, let it get a little bit drier, put it someplace cool, and, water it like once a month for a couple of months. And then you should have blooming again, usually in February or so. But they often do seem to get kind of off schedule. I've had them produce leaves in the summer quite a bit. But typically around this time of year, the leaves will start to kind of turn yellow and the bulb will go into dormancy. And the times that it hasn't done that, it's put up another flower stalk. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Dan in Partyville, on to you now. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've got another ash question, too, right off the bat. I've got an ash in my front yard. I've never had any problems with it before, but right now all the leaves are curling up, turning brown, and falling off. Is that just normal course of events for this time of year?
Are we talking mountain ash or?
I'm not sure. It was there when we moved in. I think it's just a one of those junk ashes. I don't know.
Never had any orange or red berries.
No, it doesn't have any berries.
Okay, then it's a true ash. All right. Typically, ash will turn, if it's a white ash, it'll turn kind of purple or yellow for fall color. If it's a green ash, it's usually a yellow. We don't often see, leaves turning brown before they turn color, but if it's been very dry where you are, that certainly could happen. Or if it got very cold at night, it could be that there was some burn or frost action that happened.
I wouldn't have to worry about a borer or anything of that kind.
Where are you
Emerald
now?
Emerald Ash Borer?
Partyville.
Yeah, up by Portage. South of Portage.
It's quite possible that it's here already and that we haven't found it. But usually you would have seen symptoms before fall.
Yeah, I've just noticed it in the last week.
Yeah, I don't think unless you're no. seeing cracks in the bark and lots of suckers on the stems and a lot of notice being taken by woodpeckers, that sort of thing.
No, nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably just some foliar thing that's going on. Could even be anthracnose if it's been particularly wet.
Okay.
That's a fungal foliar disease. Just rake up the leaves when you rake up the rest of your leaves and dispose of them, and it should come out okay then again next spring.
Okay, I've got another question for you. I've been looking up on the internet and in my Wisconsin tree book. I believe it's a red or white mulberry. It's
mm-hmm.
coming up as bushes. It's got the leaves are 3 to 5 lobes. The bark is smooth and it's really golden color. It's coming up like weeds everywhere.
It is a weed.
And it doesn't get berries or anything, so what's the best way to get rid of it? I cut them down, they just keep on coming back up. Do
yeah.
I round up wherever I cut, put Roundup
That's
on?
Exactly what you do, yeah. And they have a pretty aggressive root that just won't quit. If you just cut it, it's like Hercules and the Hydra. It'll send up a couple more shoots where you cut it unless you apply some Roundup. And I would not use the wimpy 1% ready-to-use Roundup. I would use like the 18% active ingredient or 35%, you use it right out of the container with a paintbrush, so that you're very careful and you don't hit any other plants in the area that you might want to keep.
No, they're not growing any place that I have to worry about that, but should I cut it flush to the ground then or below the ground? So I get
No, you don't have to get it below the ground.
Below the ground?
At the ground level or slightly above.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling. We had Jen in Madison says, yesterday I noticed two kinds of poisonous nightshades growing in the weeds of my garden. One I think was bittersweet nightshade, green and red berries. The other had deep purple berries. I tore them out. What should I do if I notice them again next year? I have a small child who likes to pick raspberries and rose hips, so it's very likely you could pick those berries too. You don't want to be what more can you do than be alert, I guess?
Yeah, it's a good thing that you know what these plants look like, both the leaf and the berry. And if you do see them again, I would say, pull them early in the season before they produce those fruits. And I would patrol your yard a little bit to make sure that there aren't any of the berries lying around. My neighbor behind me has it growing among the hedgerow of honeysuckle on the fence, and there's mulberry in there too. So I sympathize. There are always berries hanging over my yard that I'm yanking at as well, and that bittersweet nightshade or eastern nightshade does tend to have a root that splits when you pull it, so it may be back.
On to Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Paul.
Hi, folks. Thank you for taking my call. I have to preface this. I have a fairly narrow little plot. It's about 18 inches wide and about 10 feet long. And last year, there's a trellis. This is on the ground, and there's a trellis that goes up the side of my deck. And last year, I planted acorn squash and green beans in the same hills. And I had a really fine crop of both. Now, this year, I decided to grow pickling cucumbers on the same trellis, you know, training them up, and more acorn squash. And this year, I didn't get any acorn squash. I mean, the few that I have out there are only the size of a tennis ball.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's kind of, if there's any connection there. Or maybe it was just a bad season for my acorn squash. I had a huge crop of cucumbers.
There are a lot of possibilities that could have happened there. Usually, because they're both cucurbits, the squash and the cucumber, typically they like the same kind of weather. So you would think that if one prospered, the other would as well. It's possible that the beans that you grew last year, because they have the rhizobial bacteria that collect nitrogen from the soil, that, you know, maybe there was some interaction there. It could be your seed stock for the acorn squash maybe wasn't so good or something like that. We do recommend, though, that you don't plant the same type of vegetable in the same place every year, because there are various soil-borne diseases that tend to build up. So, you know, when you put squash and cucumbers, which are related in the same area 2 or 3 years in a row, you may have some problems.
Yeah, that was I. You confirmed my suspicion. I think that's what happened.
All right. Well, there you go. Thank you, Paul. Bob in Franklin, hello.
Hello. I really enjoy your program. Glad
thank you.
You have it on. My question is, I don't know if a previous caller called about. I have a landscaper friend helped me trim a couple of trees. I have a berm in the backyard with various trees and shrubs planted. And he says, hey, you have a wild buckthorn growing here.
Oh, dear.
Well, it was a... must be growing for quite a while, because it was, I think, a black haw viburnum. It had white berries, and now there's this huge shrub with blackberries on it.
Oh, and you got a female, too. Lucky you.
Oh.
That's the main way that the buckthorn spreads, is by seed, because the birds love them.
I believe it.
The Latin species name for the buckthorn is cathartica, and that's because of the effect that it has on the bird's digestive system. So they tend to spread those seeds far and wide with Rhamnus cathartica, the common buckthorn. And the seedlings, because they sit, you know, they perch in trees and bushes, that's where you tend to have the seedlings come up in the middle of them.
There's hundreds of seedlings on the ground, and it's been for a number of years, because this thing is probably 15 feet tall.
That's nice.
I thought the other bush was growing so big, but...
Yeah, probably not. Not anymore, anyway.
No. I'd be taking that out.
Yeah, I would be taking that out, too. And
how do I get rid of it? I mean, I can cut it down. It'd be too big to dig out.
Yeah, way too big to dig out. Yeah, cut it down and paint some Roundup on the cut stem is what you do.
And the seedlings?
The seedlings you can pull if they're small enough.
So many of them. I thought a berm with wood chips would be pretty much maintenance-free, but there's just so many of these.
Yeah.
Little guys, I'm concerned that when I cut these berries down, you know, that, I mean, they'll produce.
Yeah.
So what do I do with
you need to get you need to get rid of the berries or the cut material. Do you have a yard a waste pickup?
I have a compost pile that I compost, but I don't think I want to put that.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
In Madison, our municipal waste collectors will collect invasive plants separately, you know, if you bag them and so on, but this sounds like a pretty big undertaking to bag.
There's even one growing in another lilac bush that I didn't notice.
Can you burn where you are?
I don't know if I could burn. I know you can get a burning permit, but I'm not sure.
That would be the best solution if you could.
Yeah, if you can burn, I'd burn it.
Because even the dump, that's not a good idea, because I'd be spreading it someplace
else. Right, exactly. So if, you know, if your municipal collectors do take invasive plants, you might want to give them a call.
Yeah.
See.
I'm going to do that.
All right.
Well, it's really, really something.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that stuff can grow, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I was told, I looked up on the internet, and you know the story about Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah.
Where she was asleep in this... this forest,
oh, that thorny hedge, yeah.
That wild buckthorn.
You know what? I wouldn't doubt that a single bit.
No.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Lisa, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. My guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Lots of callers online already, and we've got some emails, Lisa. So let's take an email from Bob in Wausau. And what do you think about never-bearing raspberries? Never. I have cut them back 2 years in a row. They don't bear anything, or hardly anything. They have healthy-looking leaves.
Okay. Well, Bob, you may have the regular summer-bearing type of raspberry, which has, which should not be pruned 2 years in a row. What it does is the first year it puts up what's called a primocane that just bears leaves, doesn't bear any flowers or fruit. The second year, that same branch becomes called a, or same cane becomes called a floricane, so it flowers and bears fruit. So if you cut it off in the first year, you have to start over again in the second year with a new cane. That would be my guess, unless you've got them in too much shade. And even in too much shade, you should at least get a few.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's what the problem is.
Mary Jane in Woodruff, your turn. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I am a very novice gardener. And for the first time in about 10 years, my landscaping will be done and I can start gardening.
All right.
I'm very excited. I'm looking at how to stagger perennials so they come up through the spring and summer. And the highest point, I really would like irises in there. The highest point is about 3 feet, and my area that I'm really looking at is below windows, and they open to the outside. So I need, I have my space is about 3 feet, or I'm sorry, about 18 inches by about 6 feet. And I would like some resources as well, or books that I can go to the library for to help me with that. And I really would prefer perennials, so they come up every year. Mm-hmm. And I will take my answer off the air.
Okay, so she's got an area about 18 inches wide, mm-hmm. but it can grow up to 6 feet tall before it starts getting in the way of the windows. That's
mm-hmm.
one. And the other area, I believe, was 3 feet high, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, you needed something that'll mm-hmm. grow about 3 feet.
Are we talking
I
sun?
I want to stagger it so the plants come up. I like to pick flowers and I like to plant, put them in vases. So I want something that I can also do that they're not going to die right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am a total novice.
Okay.
At this, so I will go off the air, and I would like a resource book as well.
I would like to recommend Almost Anything by Tracy D. Sabato Oust. Of course, she has a long name. Tracy, it's capital D and small I, S-A-B-A-T-O, and then there's a hyphen, and A-U-S-T. And Tracy D. Sabato Oust has written a number of books. One is The Well-Tended Perennial Garden, which is the best book that I have seen on deadheading and maintenance of perennials, but she also has some great charts on blooming, which ones are the longest blooming, some really good combinations of perennials. She also has one, The Well-Designed Perennial Garden, that's very good. She's out of Ohio, so it's also kind of Midwestern based. And so well-tended perennial garden or well-designed perennial garden, either one of those, I've just been very impressed with her work. There's also perennials for northern climates that you might want to look at, and that's published out of Minnesota, I think. So, you know, with gardening, you end up with a garden of or a library garden of books as well as a garden of plants because nothing covers everything. But I think Tracy has a pretty good take at it.
And again, her the last name, Di Sabato Aust, is spelled capital D, I, is it capital S?
Yeah, capital S.
D, I, capital D, I, small I, capital S, A, B, A, T, O, hyphen,
A, U, yeah, capital A, U, S, T.
A, U, S, T. There you go. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Jared in northern Wisconsin, on to you. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jared. I got a house in Hazelhurst, and I'm trying to find out what the most durable, fast-growing grass could be. For we cleared out some land from pines, and we have horses, and I'm wondering what would be the most durable, fast-growing grass.
So this isn't a lawn grass, then, and
it's
you're thinking about a pasture grass?
Yeah, for horses. I mean, it's not going to get trampled to death, and it's going to grow fast enough to keep up.
Ooh, that one, boy, you got the Stumper of the Day award. I am not a pasture person, but what I would do is call your local extension office. If they have a livestock ag agent, that person would have a better idea. I know you have to be real careful with horses about the types of plants and weeds, too, that are growing in pastures. So I'd rather have an expert get that one for you.
So get a hold of your county extension office and ask for the county ag agent.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And they'll know, you know, like for your area in particular.
Yeah.
That's important. Kathy in Milwaukee. Let's go to you now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of questions. And the first one is about a climbing hydrangea that I planted 4 or 5 years ago with the understanding that it would do great in the shade. And I knew it was going to be slow in growing. However, it's never flowered. Is it supposed to flower?
Yes. You've had it 4 or 5 years. What kind of shade are we talking about here?
Well, it used to be complete shade. Now, because of a tree in the vicinity that's been taken down, it still is shade predominantly, but in the afternoon it gets a little sun.
Okay. It does need some sun in order to bloom, and usually you have them in the ground, depending on how big it was when you got it. Usually about 3 or 4 years after you put it in, it'll start to bloom. But if it has been in too much shade, it might take another season or so before you see it start to bloom. Is it going up another tree, or is it on a trellis?
No, it's on a trellis, and it's gone up almost to the top. I'd say 6 feet tall, and maybe it's spread out 4 feet wide.
Yeah?
Yeah, it should bloom for you.
Okay, then I'll have to be patient.
Yes, you will, Kathy.
The other question has to do with a multi-stemmed river birch that I have growing in the yard that it's been in 5 or 6 years, doing great, except this last year, one of the stems, which is very tall, produced hardly any leaves so that it's kind of lopsided looking. And I'm not sure if that's because of the evergreen that was really intertwined with it from the neighbor's yard, which we now trimmed back, the parts that were hanging in our yard.
Good.
Or if there's, you know, some other problem with the tree itself.
Had it been growing well before that, or was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would check at the branch, make sure that it doesn't have any borer holes in it or anything. That river birch is pretty resistant to bronze birch borer, but in certain situations, it can still have problems with that. Did it just not leaf out this spring, or did it turn yellow first, or
no, it just didn't leaf out? No, it didn't leaf out. You know, from what I can see, it's just that whole trunk and part of the, you know, tree that's not doing anything.
Yeah, I'd look at it very closely and see if you see any little D-shaped holes. They're not very big, but in that branch, and you'll probably end up removing it if there's no signs of life in it. Have you noticed any woodpeckers or anything over there?
Not there. There's woodpeckers who have been attacking my pergola, my wooden pergola. But I think I took care of them. I decided to use the same spray that we use when the dog starts to chew on something that you don't want him to, and I forget the name of it right now.
Hmm.
But it seems to have taken care of the woodpecker.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, nothing springs to mind immediately but the possible borer problem. And if that is the problem, we have a very nice fact sheet on it at our learningstore.uwex.edu site. If you just Google learning store, all one word, it'll pop up for you. So you might want to check out bronze birch borer if you do find any of those holes.
Thank you so very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Karen in Belgium, Wisconsin. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some fruit trees. I've got some apple, pear, cherry, and some peach. I have four of each. And this year, I got no apples, and the pears were dried out on the stem, and they cracked open. And I had absolutely no cherries. And I just don't know what's going on.
Huh. You didn't see any of these kinds of symptoms last year?
No.
Did you do any major pruning?
No.
Okay. Trying to think what else. Well, there's always the fire blight possibility. Did you notice any leaves that were brown that stayed on the tree?
Yeah. In fact, they turned rather early. They're still on the tree.
Okay.
But they're brownish.
Any sunken, discolored areas on the branches?
Not that I noticed.
How about sticky goo?
No.
No sticky goo.
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. How about fertilizer? Did you put
No, I don't fertilize in it.
Okay.
Well, we may have fertilized. I think we fertilized the trees with that slow release, those spikes that you put in the ground.
Uh-huh. Generally, they don't recommend a whole lot of nitrogen for fruit trees because you tend to get leaves instead of fruits.
Okay.
But unless they put on a big flush of leaves that you noticed this year, I probably wouldn't think that was it either.
No. They just haven't looked good from the get-go.
Yeah, I would check for cankers and cracks and sap coming out.
You
may have a fire blight issue there or possibly some other kind of maybe a fungal issue.
Okay, and then what do I do? Is there anything you can do?
Well, with fire blight, unfortunately, you can limit the spread, but there isn't a cure for it. There's a very good fact sheet on our WIHORT site, or you could call Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic and talk to him about that.
Okay, but there should be sap.
Gummy and sticky kind of stuff, and especially the cankers, the sunken, discolored areas, or maybe cracks where that's coming out.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Philip in Milwaukee. Philip, hi. Thank you for calling.
23 years ago, I was in Hungary and tasted raw paprika. I have never been able to find it. I'd like to know why I can't find it here and what needs to be done in order that I can eat it here. It's the best tasting pepper I've ever had.
Wow. You know, I think I'm trying to remember whether I saw some at like Seed Savers may have had Hungarian peppers of some kind. My guess is that if you can't find it here, that it may need a longer growing season than we have, or something on that order. But I would check. I would check Seed Savers or some of the like Johnny's Seeds or Select Seeds. To there's also a place called Totally Tomatoes. It isn't Totally Tomatoes. It has tomatoes and peppers, and some of those peppers are unusual ones as well.
Okay,
so that's what I would do.
Thank you for calling, Greg in Madison. Hello to you.
Hi, I have a quick question. I've got rhododendron bushes and azalea bushes on the west side of the house, and they bloomed twice this year. They bloomed after I pruned them after their initial flowering. I just don't know if I should prune them again or just leave them.
Definitely just leave them. Generally, you don't prune azaleas or rhododendrons too much.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you for calling. And Jeff in Greenfield, hi to you.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about, is a rhododendron compatible with black walnut tree?
No.
I don't think it
no,
is.
No, it's not.
No. And we have, I sound like a broken record here, and then I'm dating myself even more instead of saying a scratch CD or something like that, but... at our WIHORT site, we do have a nice fact sheet on black walnut and what is compatible with it and what isn't.
So
I'm pretty sure rhododendron is not.
Yeah. There are a bunch of things that aren't. Tomatoes, for example, and you know, the root system of the tree, of any tree, can go 3 to 5 times as wide in spread as the tree is tall. So it's easy to end up, you know, if your neighbor has one, it's easy to end up in the root zone of that tree and have problems growing various things. What I tell people to do that want to grow, for example, tomatoes or other vegetables in the root zone of a black walnut is to do raised beds or put them in pots. But the rhododendron, of course, wouldn't grow in that.
And you need to cover the bottom of the raised bed with, otherwise the roots can come up.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, yeah, with some weed fabric or mm-hmm. something like that to keep those out.
Okay, well. Then the preceding caller, he said he had a rhododendron on the west side of the house.
Yeah.
Is that too much? I thought that was too much sun.
Well, it depends on the type. If it's an evergreen rhododendron, it generally needs partial shade. Now, I don't know. He may have trees planted on the west side of his house.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But an azalea, particularly the Northern Lights series, you know, White Lights and Mandarin Lights and Orchid Lights, all of those can take a fair amount of sun and actually should have some sun, more than an evergreen species.
Than a rhododendron.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sure. Diane. And let's go to Diane in Sheboygan next. Hi, Diane.
Hello. I got a couple questions for you. I believe it's goldenrod, or it's an invasive species that actually seems to love my yard. It's pretty much taken over at least 3 of the 5 acres.
That sounds like Canadian goldenrod. It's a native, but it's what we call a weedy native.
Yeah. And is there anything I can, I mean, my husband was talking about burning this fall, but I don't know if that's really going to help her.
That might actually end up encouraging it.
Okay.
What I would do is you can either do it. Let's see, where are you located again, Sheboygan?
Yeah.
Roundup works best when it is applied to actively growing tissue. So I probably would wait until spring, and I'd, you know, cut it down a bit so that it's easier to spray. And I would spray it at that time. It does tend to form these big colonies. I've got an enormous one in the teaching garden at the extension office that we're going to dig out. But boy, when you have 3 to 5 acres, that's not an option.
Not
yeah. Okay. And the other question I have is, I have an oak leaf hydrangea, which is gets beautiful leaves, gorgeous color in the fall, but it has never flowered.
An oak leaf hydrangea, yeah, that's another one of those that the flower buds are not hardy, but the plant is. I dug one out of my yard, and I'm in zone 5, and it still wouldn't flower for me. I had it in a protected area. I was hoping that, you know, maybe I could get away with it in that little microclimate, but no go.
Because it forms its buds now, right? Now the buds dying off in the winter, and not, if that's what's going on with that plant?
It's one of those that does flower on old wood. And besides the old wood problem that, you know, buds might die over the winter, the flower buds are not hardy to zone 4. I think you're zone 4 in Sheboygan. Maybe you're 5, but
it's kind of borderline.
Yeah. And you never know what Mother Nature's going to throw at you over winter, whether it's going to be a zone 4 winter or a zone 5 or maybe even a 3. Who knows?
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an email from Kelly. I have quite a few smaller potted perennials, ornamental grasses, bushes, and evergreens purchased over the summer. Time running late here to plant. Is there a way to overwinter them and plant in the spring? Potted perennials.
You still got plenty of time before the ground freezes to get those in. I would definitely recommend making sure that the evergreen gets planted and that, you know, if our current weather pattern continues where we have plenty of soil moisture, you're good. But if it starts to dry out by, you know, early October or, you know, usually I keep watering my evergreens through November if it's been dry, particularly those that haven't had a lot of time to establish. The only thing I could recommend for, you know, most of the perennials is that you sink the pot in the ground, which is just the same as planting it anyway, just about. So usually you'll have through the middle of October at least to put all of those things in.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And we have just in time to mark the autumnal equinox. Organizers announced the Harvest Moon Festival and Sustainability Fair. That is for September 24th and 25th. So guess what?
That's today and tomorrow
at Weber's Garden Center, Green Bay Avenue in Milwaukee. So they're going to have lots there. They've got a big emphasis on, of course, local food production. So chance to take in the Harvest Moon Festival and Sustainability Fair at Weber's Garden Center, 4250 North Green Bay Avenue in Milwaukee. And Lisa, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
We'll have her back and we'll do it again. Lisa Johnson is the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Just to take a look ahead and see what's in store for us on Monday, Karen Shaner comes by. She's got a new book out. It's called Bats Sing, Mice Giggle. And so I'm looking forward. I'll read it over the weekend. And then our weather guys wave goodbye to summer with me on Monday. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.